Welcome to the Coconuts Podcast. Today is June 19th, 2020. The Coconuts Podcast delivers impactful, weird, and wondrous reporting by our journalists on the ground in eight cities: Singapore, Bangkok, Hong Kong, Manila, Jakarta, KL, Yangon, and Bali. Listen to headline news and insightful interviews on matters large and small, designed for people located in or curious about Southeast Asia and Hong Kong. I'm Byron Perry.
I'm Vim Shanmugam.
And I'm Summer Lee.
So guys, today, June 19th, is a day that will go down in the history books of Singapore. Yay. Phase one slash the circuit breaker, because they were kind of the same, is over. And now people can go out to eat and shop and go to malls, I believe.
Mm. Yay! Exciting. Whoa. Celebration.
We have been on lockdown since April 7th. It's been a long time, about 10 weeks. No restaurants, no malls, no gathering with friends.
No bubble tea, very important.
No boba, boba apocalypse. Never forget. It's been a challenge. What are you guys going to do? Summer, are you going out tonight to eat, or are you going to wait on the first rush?
Absolutely not. I'm going to wait till everybody gets out of the system, maybe transmit a few diseases, if there is still any lingering. I assume
sexually
there is.
Sexually transmitted, obviously. No.
Absolutely. All different kinds.
Transmit all your diseases and then we'll come out to play.
Yeah, for sure. I've heard that a popular hot pot restaurant chain is now like fully booked for the rest of the month or whatever.
Yeah,
that's the one. Yeah. But it's like, wasn't like hot pot restaurants kind of one of the cause for maybe a few clusters in China, if I'm not wrong? Because you know, it's like easy to transmit droplets through hot pot steam. People, what are you doing?
It's possibly the most dangerous type of eating that one can do. How about you, Vim? You have plans tonight, or are you going to wait?
No, I'm one of those, like, I've always been sort of a germaphobe anyway, so this doesn't really change anything for me. I saw a meme that said, in chess, the pawns go first. So I'm going to wait.
Yes, send in the guinea pigs and the pawns.
Mm-hmm. Let me know how it's like outside.
It's funny. I'm totally the same. I'm like, going to wait. And it's not even because I'm too worried about transmission, although that's a factor. It's just like, I think it's going to be rammed everywhere. Mm-hmm. And I'm just not that like, I definitely am very excited to go out to eat. And but yeah, I can wait a few days. I think it says something about your lockdown, because I know basically half my friends are like, dude, why are you like, I want to meet up tonight, like Friday night, let's go. And I'm like, no, calm down. And then other are like, yeah, I'm in no rush. Like, let's do something next week. Or so I think it's the people who really struggled during lockdown, which is fair and fine, you know, who really want to get out there. And it's the people who maybe have been okay with lockdown that are down to keep on chilling.
Yeah, I think like as long as people are safe and observe their social distancing, follow the rules, and you know, like don't go overboard, it should be okay. If not, like the worst case scenario is like, I don't even want to think about it, but you know, we might be back where we started like a month ago or two months ago.
Yeah,
and isn't China battling like the second wave and like things are starting to get locked down again?
That is just in Beijing. And the number of cases that I saw, which of course, frankly, you always have to take a massive boulder of salt with any numbers coming out of China. But
true.
It was just in Beijing, and it was something like 100 cases in Beijing. Oof. I believe that caused them to really shut down Beijing again specifically. So I don't think it's anything like a massive second wave throughout China, but it is an outbreak within Beijing. I do believe that the Singapore government regulations are very strict and it's very small and people will comply with them. And yeah, if you're sitting quite far apart from people at a restaurant, if you've been checked in and out, you're not wearing a mask while you're eating, most likely, but you've worn a mask there. Like, I think Singapore is one place that can do a really good job of preventing a second wave, because if there's an outbreak, I mean, if someone contracts COVID and, you know, where they've been is going to be recorded. And every single person that went to that place is going to be notified and forced to stay at home. And so, like, I think that's one thing that Singapore is really good at, the test and trace, you know. So I think we will see some of that if there are some small situations of people turning out to have contracted COVID and haven't gone some places. But I think Singapore will be really good at testing and tracing and having everybody who was in that place again stuck at home for 2 weeks. And I don't think there will be that many outbreaks of that, because there doesn't seem to be that many overall cases outside of the dorms where there's thousands and thousands. So let's see. Fingers crossed.
Yep. In case you didn't know, we have an Instagram where you can get the latest updates on all the happenings from around Asia, especially updates on our original content like Coco Chats, our live sessions on Instagram. And yeah, you could be our 10,000 follower. Exciting. We still have a ways to go, but you know,
woo!
Dreams there. And yeah, you can hashtag GoCoconuts to be reposted. Yay. And for our top stories, we start off in Bali, where they're in no hurry to reopen tourism, according to the governor. So the Bali governor, Wayan Koster, says he's in no hurry to reopen tourist attractions across the province, emphasizing that Bali will implement a carefully planned approach to welcome a new era for the popular holiday destination.
In his words,
"I am not in a position where I will follow the complaints of tourism players who want to reopen quickly." And yeah, the reopening of Bali amid the COVID-19 pandemic continues to be a hot topic among officials, tourism players and global travellers, many of whom have expressed varying degrees of optimism since the early days of the coronavirus outbreak. Tourism players said in April that Bali stands to lose $9 billion, while the country's central bank said last month that Bali's among the hardest hit economies in Indonesia, both as a result of the pandemic. So wow. Yeah, it might be a while, like, before we get to go surfing or whatever. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure we've even on this podcast had other stories over the last weeks that said it was going to open sooner, like July, and then it was October, and now it's saying no rush. So it seems like we're getting a lot of mixed signals, and I think that's just evidence that nobody really knows. But of course, they want to open it as soon as possible because tourism is so big there, but they don't really know.
Yeah, and even those beaches that were slowly opening up to foreigners and not locals. Yeah, it seems like a let's do something, but don't know what. Let's spin a wheel.
So much uncertainty. I had a 40th birthday party for two of my good friends, or no, three of my good friends that was supposed to happen in July in Bali. Not happening. So the impact is real.
Were people flying in? Were they planning on flying in?
No, nobody. Okay. Maybe one of my buddies lived in Bali, but everybody else is flying in from all over Asia.
Yes.
Hashtag sad.
TBC everywhere. I have a friend who, I think it's most, a lot of beach towns just around the region are just, you know, just kind of half in, half out. You know, they don't know what's going on.
Yeah. Could be good for Sentosa. I'm taking a massive vacation over the bridge to Sentosa, which is a little vacation isle here within Singapore. It's no Bali, but it'll do. For now, I guess.
It's all we have.
Yeah.
It really is all we have. Yeah. Well, now that you mentioned Sentosa, let's go to Singapore for our next story. This is kind of a serious one and kind of pertains to podcast hosts all around Singapore. But the Singapore president has ordered popular podcast host OK Let's Go to apologize to women. So this comes off their popular podcast where they talk about all things in the Malay community, and recently they've been making a lot of derogatory comments about women, misogynistic comments, and people kind of blew up on it. You know, they went from slut shaming a transgender woman to talking about you know, just the modesty of women in sort of a very embarrassing ways. So the president has come out and sort of asked them to apologize. They did sort of give a non-apology, saying that they're not mainstream media and that, hey, we're trying to push the envelope. This is how, like, the Malay bros talk. It kind of brings me back to when Trump had that whole excuse of locker room talk. You guys remember that? About women. And yeah, I think they're, you know, being in Singapore, and I know the Muslim community, especially like, you know, the modesty women sort of, I mean, generally like all women, but especially in the Muslim community, like, you know, the modesty women are something that's really sort of protected. And yeah, so I think it's sort of a very highly sensitive situation. They've lost some sponsors, some more MPs, ministers of parliament here in Singapore have come out and said that, you know, they do not support the podcast. So yeah, it's kind of a very, very difficult time. So yeah, I can't obviously speak about it too much because I'm not, you know, in the Muslim community or, you know, but one thing for sure that we don't condone this type of language and these type of views.
Yeah. Is the podcast in Malay?
Good question.
Do you know, Summer?
I think
it's... No, it's a mix, right? I think it's a mix, yeah, but largely largely English too, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty it's big when the president of the country kind of calls you out on Facebook, which I think is where it happened, but it seems like a good thing that has come out of this is a wider dialogue about misogyny. Specifically in the Malay community. I think we just had somewhat of an opinion piece that we published yesterday by a young lady, Singaporean Malay lady, I believe, who kind of talked personally about the sexual harassment and sexual harassment that she's faced that kind of gets, is just normalized within the Malay community that really she's saying should not be.
Yeah, it's a tough one. I think netizens have, you know, largely been quite, you know, they've been very vocal about how negative the comments have been. So, yeah, I think hopefully that, you know, the guys can understand the hurt that's been put out and work with, you know, the different Malay communities like, you know, the Singapore Muslim Women's Association, Mendaki, and even sort of, PPIS to sort of go ahead and you know, kind of learn and find a respectful medium to move forward.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, like, the simple thing here is to not talk about women.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe they should focus on better content if, like, this is, you know, what they, in their eyes, is, like, content that's shareable to their audience.
Yeah.
What does it say about you, sir?
Yeah. Or have more, half a women host. Because I think they're kind of music people as well, and you know, they are sort of, you know, talking about, I think they kind of position themselves as sort of like the more provocative, like, Malay community podcast, but hey, you know, women have views as well, and you know, if you want to be provocative, you know, in this region especially, like, you know, a lot of Muslim women especially don't get a chance to sort of be in media where they can vocalize what's happening. So yeah
what I didn't like is how they were like, oh, we're just provocative, you know, that's how we talk. And it's like, yes, that's the point, that's not okay, you know.
Yeah.
And being edgy shouldn't be being misogynistic, and if that is the way you talk and that's what you think is edgy and cool, that's the whole problem. Bro,
and if you're gonna invite like a transgender woman onto your show, yes, you're giving her visibility for sure, but it's like, you're gonna go ahead and comment on her boobs and how it makes you feel. Oh my god,
what did they say? I heard they commented on her boobs. What did they say?
I don't know exactly what they said. I think I've been trying to block that out. it was a passing comment.
They was obviously like, you know, she was a woman, or she is a woman that went through some sort of augmentation. And so they said, and they made comments such as like, oh, was she wearing a bra or not? Like, and things like that really were sort of like, you know, not cool, you know.
Yeah.
They started to sexualize a woman. And, you know, I think these things are, you know, and they pass it off as, oh, this is just like, you know, humor. This is what we do in our daily lives. And I think that's a bigger conversation, right? Like, I think that's the conversation in society that, you know, and you know, I think we're all guilty of it on some level, like not just misogyny, but like about, you know, maybe race or you know, just making comments in general that we think that, oh, this is just funny, we just put it off. But you know, I think those are learning moments, and I think especially in this time, you know, with Black Lives Matters, and that's a whole other story, but like, it's kind of a similar thing. Like, you know, having this conversation now, I think, is important at no other time in the world but now, you know?
Yeah. Yep. Misogyny ain't cool, in case you forgot. Anyway, moving on to the Philippines, our top story this week on Coconuts Manila was the really unfortunate sentencing and guilty charge leveled against Maria Ressa, the founder and CEO, I believe, of Rappler, one of the leading news websites in the Philippines. She was found guilty of cyber libel by the Manila City Regional Trial. And additionally, a Rappler journalist, Ronaldo Santos, was found guilty. And they were sentenced to prison for at least 6 months and up to 6 years. The case is still appealable up to the Supreme Court of the Philippines. And the two have posted bail and are out and not in prison currently. But it's absolutely a blow to the freedom of speech and the freedom of media in the Philippines. It is absolutely a politically trumped up charge. Incredibly, the story that supposedly is libelous was published before this law even existed. That's one of the crazy facts about this trial, that basically they published a story which kind of made allegations that a former chief justice in the Philippines had used vehicles owned by a wealthy businessman who's connected to, who's alleged to be connected to possible drug trade in the Philippines. So that was what the story did. That was story was published in 2012 before the law came out or was made a law. The law was made a law later, I think later in 2012. They updated the story. Let me see when. I think
2014, right? They republished 2014.
Yeah, well, republished. No, they didn't republish it. They updated it to correct a typo. And that was what was deemed as republishing it and what made it fall under the remit of this law. And it's really ridiculous. So it's incredibly sad. Maria Ressa has been a huge advocate for freedom of speech, freedom of media across Philippines, Southeast Asia, and the world. She was named Time's one of Time's People of the Year in 2018. She's gone and spoken around the world about the war on freedom of media and freedom of speech in the Philippines. She herself and Rappler have been attacked relentlessly by troll and bot armies that seem to be really, you know, it's hard to prove, but they're all very pro Duterte, the president of the Philippines. She's basically facing an information war and a troll war where people are saying the most horrific things about her, harassing her. Facebook hasn't done nothing. She's complained heavily to Facebook, where most of this occurs. Facebook has repeatedly told her they're not going to do anything about this abuse that she faces. And yeah, she has been a huge advocate of, yeah, like controlling the platforms, stopping the way that misinformation is spread on them. And it's a huge topic that you can read more about if you Google Maria Ressa and Facebook and look into all the statements that she's made, the speeches that she's made. She was the keynote speaker of the 2018 Society of Publishers in Asia Awards, which I was at, where she basically gave this same speech that I think she's made around the world. And I just hope that something changes and she's able to get out of this horrific, trumped up conviction because it's terrible.
Yeah, this is a really, really like tough one. She's like essentially one of the most famous like journalists that have been sort of like doing the fighting the good fight, if you may.
Yeah, absolutely.
For so long.
Former CNN anchor. She's a really impressive journalist and presenter. And I know her. I've met her several times, had coffee with her in Manila, sat next to her at the SOPA Awards, and it's just terrible.
What are the, so like, what are the, like, obviously she has a whole string of charges against her. What is the current situation with her? Like, is she, she's in Manila now, right?
She's in Manila. I think she's been prevented from leaving. And that's what's so impressive about her. She's so brave. She's a very small woman. She's maybe barely 5 feet tall, but she is one tough cookie. And she's not, you know, she could try to flee the Philippines. Before this, she was traveling extensively to go around the world and speak. She could have not came back to the Philippines easily. But she's there fighting these, what she says and what I believe, frankly, are bogus charges right there in Manila, where, you know, the justice system seems to be conspiring against her. And so she's out on bail. She's fighting this charge. This is the most progressed of her various charges. She's also facing tax evasion and I think something about the ownership of Rappler, saying that it's foreign owned, which I guess is illegal. So, yeah, she's there continuing to fight the good fight, not afraid of prison. She's talked about how she's ready to go to jail for this cause. She's very active on Twitter and social media and, you know, very publicly speaking out about the specifics of even this case, which I don't, you know, don't know well enough to speak about authoritatively, but saying, you know, proving how she says nothing was libelous, proving how it's absolute bullshit that this cybercrime law has been enacted retroactively. So this is something we'll keep covering and, yeah, let's hope that she can have some good news in the future with her fight against these trumped up charges.
And over in Hong Kong, this piece of news involves singer-songwriter Billie Eilish, who shared her tweets praising Hong Kong protesters. And now her Chinese fans are angry. Angry mob time. But yeah, on Tuesday, the American artist shared a set of tweets on her Instagram account, and the tweets praised Hong Kong protesters and suggested that Black Lives Matter demonstrators can learn from the way that they put out tear gas fired by police, buy train tickets instead of using traceable metro cards, and look out for undercover cops wearing earbuds. And yeah, so a now deleted tweet that she shared says, "I'm from Hong Kong, and protesters here have some of the smartest tactics when fighting with our own police brutality." Yeah, so Billie Eilish only shared the tweets and did not comment on her views about Hong Kong. But on the Chinese social media platform Weibo, you know, for the non-Chinese, some netizens took that to mean that Eilish is a supporter of Hong Kong independence and against the Chinese Communist Party. So yeah, thousands criticized her on the platform and said that they would no longer support her. I'm just thinking about her song where she goes like, "I'm the bad guy," and oof. Okay, that's timely.
Summer, do you like Billie Eilish?
I do. She's so talented, and she's what, 18?
I have to confess, I don't get her. Like, I've really given it the old college try of listening to her, but I find her songs quite just kind of simple. I don't understand why people think they're so amazing, but I think she's cool. But sorry, I'm a noob and a boomer.
That's okay, boomer. Like, music is subjective.
Okay, boomer.
It's a safe space.
Yeah,
I like her. I'm really excited for her Bon song, "No Time to Die." I thought that was like her performance was amazing. Yeah.
Her vocal range, my friends, that is the draw here.
I'm gonna keep trying.
Yeah.
So guys, there is a fun story from Sabah, Malaysia, where a student broke the internet because she sent a little YouTube video of her hiding. Well, I shouldn't say hiding, but sitting in a tree for 24 hours to get good internet connection to do her exams. Vivona Mosipin, a student, 18-year-old student from University Malaysia Sabah. She lives like in a small village that really depends on electricity for via generators and their own way of getting electricity. So she had to climb to the highest point in nearby to get good Wi-Fi on her phone in order to do exams. So she posted about it and went super viral, got like 40,000 new followers, like on subscribers on YouTube, and really just sort of like talked about how she had to be there to do these exams, hiding, you know, in a mosquito net. She was attacked by like hornets. So the next time someone complains about needing to wake up early to go to school or anything along that, where anyone's, you know, first world problems on like exams and education, you have no more excuse. There is no excuse.
It sounds like an Asian parent would like weaponize this. Okay, you don't want to wake up early, but did you have to climb a tree to get Wi-Fi signal? I don't think so. Go to school.
Oh no, she's made it more. She's given more fodder for tough every Asian parents.
Yeah,
so this is great.
No, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, hopefully it's true, first of all, because you never know when these things get faked, but it does seem true, and it's so amazing. Like, she climbed up a dang tree to complete her school, and that is dedication. Like, some people can't get out of bed in the morning. Some people don't want to drive to school or walk to school or whatever. This lady climbed up a massive tree to get Wi-Fi to complete her exams.
I just want to know, like,
awesome.
Yeah, does she get an A for PE, you know, because there's actual video proof, like.
Well, that's what I was going to say. It's like, if she doesn't get a top mark on this grade, on this test, I'm pissed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. 100%. It's actually like a really cool story because she went to there was a hill that was like kind of famous for like having good reception. A hill that's that's already like a really fun sentence. But she built like a little like hut, but it was like basically knocked down by a storm, and then she had to climb up into a tree, and all she had was like some water, some food, some rice. I think they're called linopods, which is like leaf wrapped rice, and her smartphone, power bank, and a mosquito net. That's all she had, and she kind of found like a little space where she could put a couple planks of wood, probably, I'm assuming, from her broken hut, and that was her table, and she did her exams.
You know what? That's gonna survive the apocalypse. Like, I can feel it. Just gonna say, put it out there. Yeah.
This lady is badass. Moving on to our top story of the week. It's a bit of a sad one, a bit of a funny one. If you are a fish lover, you won't like this story. But unfortunately, it's about a young man whose beloved pet fish was deep fried and eaten by his father. We have Nadia, who is our Coconuts Jakarta Associate Editor, who wrote the story, to discuss it. Let's get Nadia on the line. Hi, Nadia.
Hi.
So yeah, Nadia, this was our top story so far of 2020. Nearly 200,000 people have read it so far. It seems to have gone viral, to use the term we hate. Tell us what happened to this poor young man's arowana pet fish.
Okay, so this guy is actually from the Sukoharjo Regency in Central Java, but he currently works in Cikarang. It's an industrial city in Bekasi Regency. And then one day, he received a picture sent from his brother that their dad was frying his beloved arowana fish.
Oh my God. And yeah, like the quote that you added to the story, which I think was from his post, he said, "My arowana was fried by my father. I brought it, I bought it in Jatinegara, aged around 4 years, and it had accompanied me in Cikarang for 2 years. I brought it home to Sukoharjo, but my father didn't take care of it because he was lazy and ended up frying it." Was there any more info about like what happened there? Is his dad just kind of an asshole, or was like, how did it go from being a pet fish to being okay to deep fry it?
So this story is actually, it has a tinge of absurdity, and it's kind of funny, but it's actually really tragic.
Yeah.
The guy Bayu, he said that his dad got lazy. He got lazy. So arowana is usually they usually feed on crickets or centipedes. But his dad just gave the fish lizards, you know, the old-fashioned chichak that usually crawls on our walls. Yeah. and the fish even got sick one time because he was given the lizards. Bayou said in an interview that the fish even got cross-eyed.
Wow,
that's so funny. And also he went through like an operation, right? The fish had an operation.
Yeah.
I didn't even know you could operate on fish. That's so weird.
You actually can, because I saw on TV one time that a team of vets operated on fish.
I think for arowanas. Fish... What's that, Summer?
Is the fish underwater while you're operating on it, or like what? Does it stop breathing? Like, I genuinely do not know how fish work.
Yeah. How do fish work?
Do you sedate it? It's got to be underwater.
Because it cannot be out of water for longer than a few minutes without dying, I think.
I saw in the fish operating video that the fish was breathing through the tubes.
Ah, okay.
What? Yeah.
Wow.
And they actually sedated the fish. And my sister is actually a vet, but she hasn't operated on the fish before. Yeah. So I can't really ask her.
I gotta Google that. I hope there's like YouTube videos, step by step.
Why do you think, Nadia, this story was so popular? Has it been really popular in local language news in Indonesia?
Yeah, it got pretty popular. I think earlier this week. I think from Monday to Wednesday.
Yeah, like what about it made it so popular? I mean, I think it's kind of obvious that it's just crazy that this guy's dad ate his pet. But from the Indonesian perspective, why do you think it was so popular?
I think because arowana is seen as a prized pet fish. It's usually expensive, right? I mean, Bayu even bought it 2 years ago for 800,000 rupiah, or around $56-ish.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really expensive by Indonesian standards. And then he said that my fish could have been sold for around 2 million rupiah, or $141.
Do you think that his dad knew how valuable the fish was and how important it was to his son, or just was clueless about that?
So I actually had a pretty long conversation about this fish with my mom. Mm-hmm. And we actually had a theory that his dad should have known that this is his son's popular, favorite pet. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's arowana. I mean, everyone knows how expensive they are.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think it's just mere laziness.
Laziness and hungriness.
Yeah.
Sloth and what's the other? Gluttony, I guess. The guy had a quote too, Bayou. If I imagine my father eating my arowana, I feel like throwing up. Poor guy.
Yeah.
Arowanas can't catch a break right now in the region, because we just had a story in Singapore that was quite big of this actress who had a bunch of arowanas in the back of her spa or house or something like that, and a bunch of wild otters came in and ate them all up. And supposedly, supposedly those fish were worth 50,000 Singapore dollars. So, yeah, tough times for arowanas right now. They're getting fried alive, or no, maybe not alive, butchered and fried and eaten and then chowed down by otters. Tough times.
I have a weird question. How did it taste?
That's a very normal question. I'm very curious. I mean, we have photos of it. This is the exact actual fish, right? Nadia, yeah. The photos in the post. So it looks pretty dang good. Looks like it was deep fried in like a chili sauce with some rice.
Because I'm just wondering, like, with a diet of like crickets and centipedes, and which is already kind of a unique, unique thing that they would eat, right? Like, is that what they're fed, or what's their natural like diet? But I mean, like, having eaten centipedes, crickets, and geckos, lizards. Lizards, like, how would that even taste? I feel like that would be gnarly, wouldn't it?
I don't know. Any word on the taste, Nadia?
I actually woke up this morning thinking about how arowana should taste, and I think, I mean, because it was fried, and then I think it would taste as close to fried gurami. Yeah. I mean, gourami is a popular fish here.
Yeah. Mm. So delicious.
I think it should be good. I mean, it looks kind of like a snakehead type fish, which I don't know what that has various names throughout Southeast Asia. But in the photo of it prepared, like fully cooked on the rice, you can see the nice piece of cheek meat, which is like the nicest piece of meat, you know? So also it was deep fried and has a bunch of sauce on it. So it's kind of hard for that to taste too bad unless the meat is really quite strange. So probably, I'm guessing the dad enjoyed it. Yeah. So moving on, Nadia, just to chat a little bit about what else has been going on in Indonesia and Jakarta and your coverage. You wrote an opinion piece about racism in Indonesia. Can you tell us just a little bit about that piece and how this Black Lives Matter movement, which has now gone global, is spurring conversations about race in Indonesia?
Yeah, so we have our own version of, we could say that it's our own version of BLM regarding Papuan Lives Matter. Mm-hmm. Especially on the western side of Indonesia, Papuans or East Indonesians, they are usually regarded as, I don't know, they are usually the receiving end of racial jokes.
They're discriminated against. Which
are not against. Funny. Yeah, yeah, they are discriminated against.
And what are are some of the things they say about Papuan people? You can just say it. Don't worry about it being, you know, we want to hear what they actually are saying to understand it.
Okay, so the most common common jokes, I'm not saying it's a joke, but it's what Indonesians actually say. Many Indonesians have been calling Papuans as monkey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Terrible.
And I actually heard it from my own family member, so it hurts.
Wow.
Yeah.
Do you feel that some positive things are happening here, that people who maybe previously might have kind of been racist or felt some or might say racist things casually are maybe open, having different attitudes about that based on this movement?
Yeah, I think they, what I saw in the online conversation was mostly people owning up to their past, their racist past, and also many have been calling for, so there are currently 7 political prisoners. They're actually Papuan students. Mm-hmm. And they've just been charged of treason.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so. Go ahead.
Okay. And actually, many student groups across Indonesia are rallying for their freedom. So I think it's really nice to see.
That's great. And and non-Papuan Indonesians are rallying for their freedom. Yeah.
Yeah.
What were they charged with? Do you know? Does it seem like the charges are legitimate?
No.
No.
Because I think they had a demonstration for, anti-racism protests.
Mm-hmm.
And then the representative, they were arrested, and then they're now charged.
Got it. And so people are rallying to free these people who are kind of charged on maybe trumped up, not so valid charges.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, really enjoyed the piece, Nadia. And guys, you can check out both the sad tale of the deep fried arowana and Nadia's piece about racism and how the Black Lives Matter movement is spurring conversations about that in Indonesia on coconuts.co/Jakarta. Thanks, Nadia, and we'll talk soon.
Thank you so much for having me.
Of course.
Thank you, Nadia.
See you, Nadia.
See you.
See you.
So yeah, do you guys have any pet fish?
Nope.
I don't. Yeah. I'm not a fish person unless I'm eating it.
Me too. I was gonna say, like, I want to try that arowana.
He's gonna drop his like YouTube recipe. What spices go with a lizard eating fish? I must know.
That's the next. You know, that would have gone. That's the update. Deep fried arowana with Bayou's dad. YouTube cooking channel.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if he was like directly inspired by that actress who had her fish stolen. He was like, I'm gonna try that.
Exactly.
I'm curious to find out if like it's legal to cook arowana or koi fish in Singapore, because that would be an amazing YouTube video that would go viral.
If it's legal, let's do it. I'm down. I've always, I don't want to get in trouble for this, but I don't know. I don't know if I should say this. I'm kind of like anti super expensive ornamental fish. I don't know. I'm just like, I get a perverse thrill out of these stories. Especially the otter one, frankly. Like every time the otters go and eat like $80,000 of the koi fish, I'm like, hee.
Sucker Shabbat goldfish.
Because they're not native to this part of the world too. And I think, you know, sometimes they get loose and then, like, for example, in the U.S., there's an issue of like Asian carp taking over and just destroying rivers. And I think that can really happen. So I think it's kind of better if you just stick to the local fish, both as pets and for eating. I'm not 100% sure how I feel about this. And I'm sure there's a lot of, well, actually, I'm not 100% sure, but I'm sure there's a lot of bad stuff that goes on in like the exotic fish industry, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, actually, I do know for a fact that the way, this is more about ocean, like rare ocean fish. What's the word I'm looking for? Like tropical exotic fish, that those are definitely full of like bad practices. They're, you know, catching these super endangered fish in bad way. I think they do like dynamite fishing. They like kill other fish to catch them and all this terrible stuff. So yeah, verdict is still out on that. Let's deep fry an arowana. Fuck it.
Yeah, if it's legal, we should, you know, we'll, let's see how much it is. Like, I don't even know how much it would be. Like, I feel like koi fishes like would be, are super expensive, right? Like, are they like thousands of dollars or no?
I don't really know.
So,
I don't know. Yeah, I know they can be, but I didn't know if like all of them are. I think they're, because they're just like big goldfish, aren't they? But I don't know. They're carps. Like,
yeah, they are carps. Yeah, they're carp fish. So yeah, I do know like they have like, I do know that koi, this is a funny fact, I guess, like they can get STDs. They can get like a form of herpes.
Yes. Which is
I've heard about this. Yeah, so it's quite it's quite a funny thing. So I guess like you're in close proximity with other koi fish, you know, it's only like a few things you can do. So one dirty koi fish, one slutty koi fish.
There's a lot of disease. That's another thing. They just feel like farmed dirty fish, like, and I know a bit about like fish farming, and like, yeah, one disease can just rip through it, and it can be an STD or and they just all get diseased and die. Okay, I'm trying to look up the prices. I'm looking at Marugan koi fish in Singapore. Where's the price?
Yum, yum. Grocery shopping now?
Yes. Search. This is basically me going on Redmart, the equivalent. Damn it. How much are you, koi fish?
I think like, yeah, the only farm that I think I know of is the Lim Chu Kang. It's very famous. I think there used to be one in Salita, which are two sort of like, I think what, Salita is in the northern area of Singapore, and Lim Chu Kang is like in the west, like northwest.
Yeah.
Fish farms, that actually like sort of breed or sell these fish. I'd be intrigued to find out like if they're actually like, you know, like if you can actually like eat them.
Damn it, I can't find the price of any koi fish. But moving on. That's it for our show today, guys. Thanks so much for listening. We got a big announcement about our paywall today, that we are taking it down for all stories throughout Coconuts. The reason for this is several. Basically, we found that there was a huge uptick in membership when we removed the paywall on all of our coronavirus coverage. And that made us kind of realize that the paywall may not be the best tool actually to drive membership. So we are keeping our Cocoa Plus membership program. We're actually lowering the price to starting at $5 per year to become a member, but the access to the content is not part of it anymore. And everybody can access Coconut Stories as much as they want for free. So another aspect that I like about this is that, the stories and journalism and content becomes available for all for free, but you can still support us by becoming a member if you like what we do and if you want to support the stories that we tell, and if you want to get some other added member benefits, which are giveaways, access to our events, which right now are digital, and a tote bag for those contributing over $50, our awesome botanical print tote bag. So very big news. We're taking down the paywall. For those who already are Cocoa Plus members who signed up over the past 2 years, we just want to thank you profusely for becoming a member and supporting the stories that we tell. You are the reason that we do all of this. We hope that you continue your membership, and we just want to give you a special thanks. For those that want to sign up, you can go to coconuts.co/membership, or you can make a one-time patron payment at coconuts.co/patron. We're also selling our very cool Coconuts brand logo t-shirts on Teespring. Go to the website and you can find ads as to where to buy those. One other very exciting thing that is going on tonight, tune in, 6 p.m. Singapore time, 5 p.m. Bangkok time, the season one finale of ISO Date, our live dating reality TV show experiment. Woo! Vim, who do we have? Who are our daters tonight? What can you tell us about our daters?
Okay, I'll give a little bit of a tease. We have a pilot and a former pageant queen. So it should be quite exciting.
Wow.
Yeah.
Very exciting.
A grounded pilot as of right now, anyway.
I'm like, hold on. But, is he an actual pilot? He's a pilot dreams. No, I'm kidding.
No, he's an actual pilot. Yeah, we're, you know, we've gone through 6 weeks, and with Circuit Breaker sort of going to phase two, we felt like, you know, today would be the right time for the finale. Yeah. We've had six amazing, interesting couples, and yeah, this is only season one, so, you know, keep on listening and looking out on all Coconuts platforms. There will be sort of a tease for season two at some point.
Yeah, and I think we got to take it regional. That's what we got to do. I think we got to do it in other places. Season one was all in Singapore, and I think it was important for various reasons that that's what season one was. But I'm excited to do it in Bangkok and in Manila and Hong Kong. And so, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. We've had like a great response from all of you from all over the region. So, yeah, we'll be taking that show regional for sure.
Cool. Well, thanks a lot, guys. Talk to you next week, and bye.
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 Bye. The Coconuts Podcast is a Coconuts Media production. Our hosts are Byron Perry, Vim Shanmugam, and Sunny Lee. Our production manager is Clarissa Cortez.